And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
A luxury you can't live without.
A luxury I can't live without. Coffee. I really like good coffee.
It's not a luxury. You can get it anywhere.
I guess, yeah, I like good coffee.
I love coffee, too.
I like nice socks.
Socks. Your socks, would you put in your shoes?
Yeah, I really love them. I like kind of like, you know, cozy feet.
You're attracted to your socks.
I'm attracted to really nice running socks. Like, I'm always looking for good running socks.
That's not a luxury, though. Coffee and socks are not a luxury.
All right, give me a luxury. What luxury should I have?
Private plane.
Larry, I'm on DuckTales.
Good morning, Sweet World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, January 25th. I'm J.E. Skeets rolling this morning with Mr. What You Need to Know, Tass Mellis.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Tassie. We got the Bassmaster ripping them lips, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey, yo. The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, giggling from that cold open, Lee Ellis.
That was hilarious, wasn't it, friends?
Such a great clip. And last but not least, making the magic happen is JD.
Hello.
There he is. And here we are. Before we get into it, sorry about the Bills there, Tassie. It looked good for, I don't know, 5 minutes.
It's a better storyline, Mahomes versus Brady,
sure.
Isn't it? The
sure.
Next one versus the one that's supposed to be gone. That's pretty incredible.
It's pretty incredible. Unreal. You saw the stat, I'm sure, going around last night.
No, I didn't.
Tom Brady is in, will now have appeared in 18% of all Super Bowls because he's going to his 10th. Stupid. Yeah, stupid.
Ridiculous.
Bucks, Chiefs, Super Bowl.
I just hope the Raptors get some tickets because it's down there in Tampa where they're playing. That's all I care about.
Wow, hadn't thought of that. I think they're doing a big thing with the healthcare workers, if I'm not mistaken, which is good. They're going to allow them into the stadium. Anyway, congrats to the Chiefs and the Bucks going to the Super Bowl. Are they still doing the whole week off in between thing, Trey?
You betcha.
Oh, man.
I saw that. Sorry, Trey, to take your thunder. What were you going to say?
Oh, I had some hot takes ready about the Pro Bowl, Tassie. I can't wait to see him stream it and simulate it in Madden or whatever they're going to do. I can't imagine they're flying to Hawaii and playing a game, but... I don't know. Who's your third best cornerback in the league this year? Is it D'Antonio Wingfield?
Probably.
If I could name two, then I'd give you a third, but I can't.
All right. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Make sure you guys like and you comment and you subscribe. Email us your questions and comments for this week's new Beach Steppin' podcast, nodunks@theathletic.com. You can always drop a question in the YouTube comments as well, or hit us up on Twitter @NoDunksInc. Immaculate items always available for sale at nodunks.com. Go get your t-shirts and your hoodies and your shorts and your mugs and all that. And finally, if you haven't already, grab an Athletic subscription. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks, where you can sign up for just $3.99 a month. Lily, I know you like everything free in your life, but even you would have to admit $3.99 a month for the best damn sports writing in the world, it's a hell of a deal.
How can you afford not to have a subscription at $3.99 a month? I mean, they're basically giving it away. So go and get yourself one. They're great. It's great. I will say this as well. What's great about The Athletic is some of the writing, if you're into other sports like soccer or whatever, is great. And there's a really, really good couple of articles up recently from our friends on the other side of the pond, as they like to say here, about the soccer world. Because I used to be a big soccer guy, kind of left it for a while, and now I'm getting back into it. So that's what The Athletic does. It gives you a little taste of everything.
Awesome. How's the cricket coverage on The Athletic right now?
Scarce, I would say. Scarce.
Well, why don't you get to work, man? Write some articles or something like that.
I may have to do that. Yes. All right. Yes.
All right. So The Athletic, it's awesome, unless you're a cricket fan. For now.
Yeah. Did you see the graph that was going around the other day about the most, sports with the biggest audience?
No, I didn't.
Soccer was obviously number one. Guess what was number two?
Tom Brady.
No. Cricket.
Cricket.
There's a market there. Maybe I should get back into the cricket game. JD? Get that music ready.
Oh boy. God. You could you could start like a cricket show or article called Hand Ice. Lee Ellis on cricket. That's a throwback for throwback joke there for anyone that caught the cricket story from Lee a couple, I don't know, was that weeks ago? Probably a week ago.
Who knows, yeah.
Who knows at this point. Okay, so Monday, having some fun already here. We do NBA weekend winners and losers. Let's start with the winners here on Monday. Tass, why don't you get us started? Who's your big NBA winner of the weekend?
Well, it's Steph Curry because he almost has a record that definitely belongs to him. Mm. Only Ray Allen now has more threes made than Steph because it was a very nice moment on Saturday night when he tied Reggie Miller with his 4-3 and he threw up the 31 for Reg. Respect to Reg because he loved him as a kid going up against Dell, his dad. And it's fitting the next one that he hit was a very Reggie-like three, moving off the ball. It's just trademark Steph. When he passed Reggie Miller, he gave up the ball to Draymond and then flew to the corner and hit it and now has, you know, just a few more hundred to go, which sounds like a lot to catch up to Ray Allen. But for him, it's absolutely nothing. And not only is he going to catch Ray Allen next season, but after he gets to 29-73, he's only going to be 33 or he's going to be 34 years of age. So he can pad that number because that record belongs to him and he should have it by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And so, it's a nice time to celebrate Steph because, you know, he's kind of battered around the Twitter sphere at times, right? Because, he's thrown into the, hey, he didn't win, only won without KD and all that. So I just want him to have this title that is most definitely his. And I love this chart from Kirk Goldsberry that was going around that shows that Steph Curry, among all guys who have hit 1,000 three-pointers, Steph Curry, the most efficient of all of them. So he's number two in made threes, but he's number one in efficiency. And that's what makes him so special. He's going to be the guy who gets you the most points per possession in the history of the league at some point. So, you see Iverson way at the bottom, the least efficient, and Steph's going to be at the absolute opposite end, which is crazy that he shoots a percentage like Kyle Korver, but even better than Kyle Korver. Mm-hmm. So that's the numbers part of the game, and that's why I think he isn't celebrated as much as some of the dominant players in NBA history. Is just because it is a little bit more about analytics, and so it's a little less sexy. But it was a nice moment to see him celebrate Reg, and then after the game, Reggie joined the Zoom call with his son Riker, talked to Steph a little bit. And I learned a new name. I didn't know that kids could be named Riker, or I've just never heard the name. So right. That was cool for me. That was great. And it was a great moment.
Lee, one of your like famous predictions, I would say, over the course of this show, back when we were the starters, correct me if I'm wrong, but you predicted that Curry would be a guy to hit 400 threes once in a season. I remember we were like, there's no way. Because it was talk like 300 and stuff like that. And you're like, I think he can do 400.
That's wrong. I actually predicted 300 because no one had even done 300 at the time.
Oh, okay. And then he went and did 400.
And he smashed that. Because I think on the show I predicted 315, and I think his record prior to that was around 285 or something. And I was like, he's going to break 300. He's going to go 315. And then after about five games into the season, he was on track for about 390 or 400. And I thought, oh, my God, he's going to like blitz this. But you just sort of felt he's going to come back to earth at some point. No one can smash a record that no one's even made 300. No one's going to make 400 in one season. And he went out and did that pretty easily. Mm-hmm. I think he also missed a couple of games too that season. Yeah. But I believe he needed six on the last night of the season against the Grizzlies, and he ended up hitting eight. I think he had five in the first half as well. So once he got to that point, of course, that was a 73-9 season. That was Kobe's last regular season game as well. There's so much going on. But Steph went out there and set a record that hasn't been broken yet, but it will be broken one day. I think 400 threes in a season, it's just a matter of time before someone comes along and does that. And, it seems like at the time that record is like, wow, that's out of reach. But the way guys shoot threes these days, I can see someone maybe hitting 500 or 600 in a season at some point down the track. Maybe not for a few years, but guys just come into league these days just firing away. So that's what's going
to
happen, I think.
Well, the reason I brought it up is I wanted you to tell us how many threes Steph Curry will end his basketball career with.
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Steve. Skeets, because I've actually done the projected how many threes I think he's going to make from this point on, roughly. Okay. I think he's got 7 seasons left in him where he's going to be about 39. I've roughed it, averaged it out to be about 75 games per 7 seasons at three and a half threes per game. So I think he's got another 1,800 threes left in him.
Wow. Starting now.
1,800 regular season threes. Yes. Yes. So, I don't have the record here, but so he just passed Ray Allen. He's just passed Reggie Miller. He's got 400 to get Ray Allen. So I think he's going to be around 1,500 ahead of Ray Allen, about 4,500 threes when his career is done.
Okay. He's calling it. 4,500 made threes.
Yeah. I think so because, I mean, he's going to become, you know, guys like him become a better shooter as they get older, but of course, he's not going to play as heavy minutes, but he's still going to be able to hit those threes. So I think that's a reasonable sort of target he can make, 1,800. 75 games a season for 7 seasons. I think that's in play. So
And then the question will be, can anyone catch him, Trey? Like, you know, can a Trey Young moving forward, like, you know, 15 years down the line, flirt with something like over 4,000 made threes or something like that, wherever Curry ends up? Yeah.
The question to me is not can somebody catch him, how soon will somebody catch him? Because like Lee's saying, people come in chucking nowadays. Mm. It took Steph Curry a few seasons before he was the fire thrower we know and who's ready to just pull up from half court. You know, it took a while till anybody had the confidence to do that. But now you see Trae Young come in doing it his rookie year. So, yeah, I think it'll happen eventually. It'll be basically 10 years after Ray. Or wait, I guess 7 years after Ray Allen retired. He retired like 9 years after Reggie Miller retired. In the next decade, will somebody pass Steph Curry? Will we have to wait until his son makes it to the NBA and he's the greatest three-point shooter of all time? That's how it seems to go. Del Curry was one of the best of all time. Now Steph Curry is the best of all time. What's the third generation going to be? The third three-point shooter?
Ooh.
We're talking about 8, 9 a game, like Lee's saying, maybe 500, 600 a season.
Incredible. So congrats to Curry. Eclipsing Reggie Miller there. That was a cool moment. By the way, we should slip in there. The Jazz won that game, right, Tassie? Easy, and continued to get their win streak up to 8. I know Jazz fans are like, come on, we won the game. We won the game. Yep, you won the game. Utah Jazz continuing to play great basketball. We talked about them at the end of last week, and they were, you know, a little mini winner of the weekend for sure. Them continuing to keep the streak going. Them and the Clippers are on a nice winning streak right now. Okay, so Curry, he gets one. Lee, where are you going, man?
Well, Skeetsy, I'm going with your Raptors yesterday. Can one single game make you a winner of the weekend? what an incredible performance, because the Raptors went into this one shorthanded. Two of their starters not playing here, Pascal and Kyle Lowry. So this was actually sort of in Nick Nurse's playbook here. He had to call on some of the guys who don't play as many minutes to go out there and play heavy minutes, and they pretty much all delivered. I thought OG Anunoby maybe had his best game ever as a Raptor. He was fantastic on both ends of the floor, hitting threes, playing great defense, super efficient. But when the game had to be won, it came down to free throws and defense. Fred VanVleet especially, his defensive stop on Malcolm Brogdon at the end there. I've watched this over and over and over again, and it looks like he gets his hand all over Brogdon's sort of arm, hand, wrist area, but nothing was called, and no one from the Pacers complained. So it's like they were like, he didn't foul me. That was just incredible defense. And then on the next possession, the Raptors defense inside, Stanley Johnson and Boucher blocking Domantas Sabonis at the rim. Like, he could not even get a shot off, which was incredible. Well, he got the shot off, of course, but they contested it. Just incredible stuff. And the Raptors, who have started to play a lot better basketball too after their very slow start, got it together. But what a great performance. Norm Powell was very good yesterday. Fred, as I mentioned, I mean, he's been great for most of this season. But OG stepping up there. And just giving the Raptors a very, very important win. They can face the Pacers again here tonight. But, you know, when you lose two starters and for a team that's desperate for wins, to go out and get that sort of a victory against a team that's just very hard to play against in the Indiana Pacers, I thought was excellent. And I just thought that was, I think a lot of the result from this was from Nick Nurse's coaching record there with the Raptors, isn't that he does trust those guys, even if they don't play heavy minutes. DeAndre Bembry played the most minutes he's ever played as a Raptor yesterday, and he came out and delivered. You know, he's not out there scoring and shooting the ball that much, but playing the right way in the offense and setting up guys. And I think that just shows that Nick Nurse, when you're on his team, it's like, you will get an opportunity. I don't know when, I don't know how, but when you get that opportunity, I'm going to put trust in you to go out there and perform. And I thought that's what they did. So I think this is a very good sign for the Raptors that they are starting to get it together and toughing out these wins. Earlier in the season, these were the sort of games that they would lose. But instead, they're on the right side of the victory here. Great game, great performance, and really they closed down Domantas Sabonis in that second half as well. I mean, he had one of his worst offensive games of the season. Just thought it was a great all-round performance from the Raptors.
Yeah, Raps now 5-1 since starting 2-8. And Tass, you know, on Football Sunday there, yeah, this was the rare, like, 1 o'clock start, so there was nothing happening yet. None of the football games had started, so maybe some eyeballs were on this one between two pretty good teams, obviously. And like Lee said, Raps pulled it out. How are you feeling as a Raps fan, you know, with this team rebounding after a brutal start, as we talked about a couple weeks ago?
Well, I feel good to have Nick Nurse in my corner, because what he did to Domantas Sabonis there, just taking him out of the game, was the key to this one. That's Nick Nurse's MO. You see a star on the other side, make everybody else beat you. Mm-hmm. And OG Anunoby, he was the 1 and 1A defender on him, but they kept doubling Sabonis, and Sabonis just wasn't ready for all that. And so when he was blocked twice at the end of the game, you could see him shaking those beautiful locks. Like, what? How how did this happen? He just couldn't believe the 48 minutes that preceded that. So Nurse really threw him off. They took away Brogdon's right hand, and they're just ready. Nick Nurse is ready, yeah, and how he has everybody up and down that roster, yeah, they're feeling like they can get to 500 one day, and that's
getting close.
In the Eastern Conference, there's a billion teams, you know, 6 through 13. Well, I guess there's not a billion, but you know, there's 8 teams right there, 6 through 13, that. If anybody wants to make a move, it's 6 and 7 are right there for them. And when the Heat get their guys back, you assume they're going to make a move in the Raps as well. But OG Anunoby, it was a boss, man. He was a boss in that game. And it was cool to see him take that number one role and roll with it for one night. And the rematch tonight should be a blast between Nurse and protege Nate Bjorkgren.
Yeah, the Iowa Bowl, as some people were calling it. Is that where they last saw each other, I think, or last coached against each other when they were
meet
in
the me
G-League.
In Iowa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the question for me with the Raps is, like you said it there, Tass, and I'll throw it at you, Trey, like, can the Raps sort of, like, you know, that was a victory that they won last night, or yesterday, I should say, afternoon, that was reminiscent of last year, right? That was sort of like how the Raps won a lot of games last year, I think, especially down their star players in Lowry and Siakam. But can they barge their way into, like, the top of the East conversation, you know, it, like, the Sixers and the Bucks and the Celtics, I think, are all there. The Nets are in the mix. And then it's like the next tier of your Pacers, Heat, and Raptors. Can one of those three, can all of them, who or none, get into that sort of upper echelon conversation?
Well, unfortunately, I do think the Raptors are going to make it into the top six, into the guaranteed playoff spots. This mm-hmm. seems to me to be the long con from the Raptors. Come out, struggle, make it look like you're not the same championship team you used to be, and then you got everybody sitting fat, feeling good, and you're able to pull off victories like you were last season when you were the can't-say-die Raptors. But it's too bad. They're going to get into the top six because right now, 7 through 10 goes Hawks, Knicks, Bulls, Raptors. That would be absolutely perfect for us in the Eastern Conference play-in tournament. The Raptors are just too good. They had a bad couple of weeks to start the season, and it happened to come at the start of the season, which is when everybody's eyes are going to be on them. If yeah. you have a bad couple of weeks in the middle of March, it probably slides under the radar, but the Raptors seem to have found their footing down there in Florida, and they're playing some good basketball now.
Yeah, and OG, man, like, he is, look, he's not going to be in any sort of most improved conversation, I don't think. I think, as we've talked about, some of the candidates are just sort of leaps and bounds ahead of some of the other guys trailing them, but he better be a damn lock, Lele, for an all-defensive nod. Like, he has to be on one of those two teams, because, like, he is given the best guy on the other team. He's given that, you know, role, and he more times than not shuts them down, or at least contains them. And then for him, what he was doing offensively, he does not have the tightest handle, I would say, OG. But man, it's getting a little better. He's getting a little more confident, and he's just barging through guys, like, attacking. And then he's also hitting the three-pointer, which we know he can do for stretches. So it's like, you know, you hear Raps fans going, hold on, is OG already the Raptors' best player? Like, is he going to eclipse here very shortly, like a Siakam, if you still believe that? You know, Lowry is Lowry. Lowry's the GROAT, the greatest Raptor of all time, but, you know, he's obviously lost a little bit of a step. I think you could start convincing me that it wouldn't be long for OG to be the best player on this team because of what he does both ends, I think.
Yeah, well, he got the big contract just coming into the season, so certainly Masai Ujiri believes that he has a big future here, but can we please not talk all defense? I don't want to get into that Friday's debacle.
Oh, yeah. After you and your plus minuses and your on-offs and all that. Yeah, I forgot about that debacle. Anyway, OG's a lock. I think you can put him on one of these two teams.
I mean, the second team, there are sometimes players who bob up on that who no one really expects. But look, he's out there and he's playing tough. That's what I like about him, is he plays tough and then he hits those shots. And he has been someone who Raptors fans have turned on from time to time. So, you know, he's playing great right now. Everyone's in love with him. But we'll see what happens if he hits another bit of a rough patch at some point during the season, because he's someone who people like to jump on pretty quickly when he has a couple of bad games.
Yeah, he's not a number one offensive player, though. Like, that's key. I think the worst thing for him is that Pascal Siakam plays beside him and they just say, whoa, he can turn into Pascal Siakam offensively. You know, defensively, obviously, he's a boss. But the four-year, $72 million contract is pennies on the dollar because of what he does defensively and how he can contribute offensively. And somebody would probably given him even more than that this offseason, considering the free agency class and how weak it is. But just because you see one game, you can't just throw him in the, hey, he's a number one guy and he's an all-star. I mean, he hasn't even,
no, I'm not
even
that
scratched
far.
That.
Maybe but like a 1B, a 2A. Like
that. I have way more confidence in an OG shot, though, than I do a Siakam shot from outside. Mechanics and everything. Like, it's just, I got way more faith in him being a little more consistent with that. But it was his best game, probably, as a Raptor, as Lee said. I probably agree with that on both ends. All right, let's keep it going here. What do you got, Trey?
Well, the Sixers still look like the best team in the Eastern Conference. They had a great weekend. On Friday, they beat the Celtics. Embiid had 38 and 11, looking like an MVP. Again, 11 points in the fourth quarter. But the big news I thought from this one was that Ben Simmons had a huge fourth quarter. He had 11 points, and he basically just took over down the stretch against the Celtics. You know, it's going to be very interesting. I think we should see these couple of teams in the playoffs because they love beefing with each other. We got Embiid versus Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart was flopping like crazy in this game. Embiid versus Tice. Tice was flopping like crazy. Obviously, they had the beef last week about who flops the most, but that was a fun one. And then on Saturday, the Sixers kept it rolling. They beat the Pistons 33 and 14 for Embiid. He was making big defensive plays. He had some huge rebounds, but again, the story to me is that Ben Simmons had his first 20-point game of the year. 29-7 for Ben Simmons. They just need him to be aggressive, play downhill, and get in the lane because, I mean, he's scoring like 12 points a game. Everybody wants Ben Simmons to be a shooter. That doesn't seem to be the case right now, but he can still score more than 12 points a game. He just needs to take shots. He needs to be aggressive, looking to score, because if he's collapsing the defense, if he's in the lane, he's so tall that he's still got the kickout passes there, but they need him to go to the hoop and actually try and get some layups here. He had a huge drive to the hoop to get free throws down the stretch against the Pistons. He's a special defensive player already. It feels like Doc Rivers is getting everything out of Embiid and Harris to start the season. Now, if Ben Simmons is rounding into form, the Sixers are going to look even scarier. It's tough to always believe in the Sixers because they have these high highs. They have these huge peaks, and it seems that most of these are coming at home right now, which is also a classic Sixers thing to do, but it feels like the vibes are better in Philadelphia. It feels like they're confident and they're playing the right style of ball without the constant question of, should we break these guys up over the top of their heads?
Yeah, especially like the timing of it all coming off the heels of the Harden trade and them not getting Harden, but Simmons' name being thrown around. And like you kept bringing it up, Lee, like, ooh, that could be bad. Like, it'll be interesting to see how Simmons bounces back from that, how the team deals with that. And like, they just continue to, you know, get these wins under their belt. So that's fantastic, even if it means, you know, you don't need Simmons to score 25 a night.
Yeah, and he's gotten to the free throw line double digits times two of the last three games, which I think is important. He's making those free throws too, 7 for 10 and then 10 for 12. So I think that is Doc Rivers saying to him, like, yeah, don't worry, we don't care if you're not shooting, but you have to still be aggressive and get inside, because once he gets inside at 6'9", 6'10", whatever he is, there's not many guards who can really get up there and contest the shot. So he just has to take the ball strong, and he's going to get the free throw calls, and he's going to get to the line. So I think that's what it is. But overall, I think his response to that trade has been good. I think his attitude has been in the right place, because on the night where it looked like he was being traded, apparently his agent was told he was being traded, he had a bad game, and it looked like it. But then the trade happened and he wasn't included, and he seemed to be able to get over that pretty quickly. So I think that's very important for him, because again, if he and Embiid reach their potential with all their sort of surrounding players, their role players, The sky for the Sixers really is, I think, conference finals. I think that's in play. But when they can't play together and when they play at their worst, it's like first round fodder like they were last season right. in the bubble. I know Simmons didn't play in that series, but they do have quite a variance between their absolute best and their absolute worst. And so much of it just comes down to their two star players, which is often the case in the NBA. If you get the best out of those guys, then you can be great. But if one guy's not functioning or they can't work together, then they don't really intimidate or scare any of those other teams.
Yeah, so good weekend for the Sixers. I'll keep it rolling here. A winner of the weekend, the Nuggets, for going back-to-back wins over the Suns. It was the old baseball series, both of them in overtime, but they got it done. So on Friday, the Nuggets rallied to force overtime before getting the 130-126 win. Now, Jokic was a monster again in this. You know, he's, of course, at the top with Embiid and a couple other guys of the MVP leaderboard. 31 points, 10 boards, 8 assists. Jamal Murray, though, he hit a big shot, like 13-foot jumper to put Denver up 3. It iced the game. There was like 30 seconds left. And he had a good game, you know, a decent game, 18-9-7. You know, not a ton of points, not a ton of scoring, but helping across the board there in the assists and rebounds. Lost in the shuffle of that game, too, a little bit. Michael Porter Jr. returned for the first time since late December after he missed 10 games in the league's COVID-19 health and safety protocols. And, you know, he had 7 points, 6 boards in 20 minutes coming off the bench in his first one. Nuggets followed that up on Saturday against the Suns again, like I said, in another overtime game. This one went to double overtime. Jokic, once again, awesome. 29 points. He ate some roast beef, which we'll get to in a second. But they got the 8-point victory, 120-112. Suns were without Booker. Got hamstring issues. So we could very easily just sort of give the Suns a loser the weekend for losing back-to-back against the Nuggets and then this injury to Booker. But we'll keep it positive here with the Nuggets. Murray, though, in this one, in this second game, I'm sure you guys saw this, that difficult off-balance three at the end of regulation to force overtime. He ended with 26 points. Trey is dropping the traveling call out there. Definitely probably got away with a walk. Probably a foul on the play, though, too, if we're being honest. So maybe cancel each other out. But a very big shot, moving the feet a little bit on the side. And they get the victory in the end. They roll. I mean, again, it's Jokic. It's Murray having a decent game, hitting the huge shot. And Porter in this one, 14 points, 11 boards. So here come the Nuggets, maybe, Tass. You know, they started slow, just like the Raptors. But getting the victories now, I think they're 9-7 overall. And Jokic has been a rock the entire season. Murray's getting it going. And they're just getting some of these other bodies back where their bench is starting to look like, oh, that's the Nuggets bench of old.
What a doubleheader this was this weekend. Those two teams going back and forth. Unlike the Sixers and Celtics, which was a lot of floppy beef, just flop after flop after flop, these two teams... it was just good basketball going back and forth. And Jokic versus Ayton. Ayton was doing such a great job of taking away Jokic's spots, even though Jokic had a real good game because he's a friggin' superstar. He's an MVP candidate. I was really impressed with DeAndre Ayton and how they fought on a second night without Devin Booker. That was a blast. And if that's any sort of indication of what we're going to get in the postseason, I can't wait because I would love to see the Suns. I'm not so sure if I want to see Celtics and Sixers, just in terms of flop, oh man, it's too many flops. That's like flop per minute rate. That's a lot, man. Like, let's lower FPM. It. Lower it
high
a little
FPMs
bit.
FPMs for sure.
You know?
But you'd be on board. Series. You'd be on board with the Suns Nuggets series, like a 4-5 or 3-6 or something like that.
Great stories. Great stories throughout both those rosters.
Yeah, it was good. Anything to add? I mean, you thought it was a travel, Trey. I actually think you're right there with Murray.
So did the last 2-minute report. They said it was a travel. He did the smart move, though. He took a shot from right underneath the scorebug. Couldn't really see what his feet were doing, but he caught the ball there. But if they don't call it, it counts. That was a crazy shot with zero reaction because there was nobody there. But I was like, oh, wow, that went in. Incredible stuff. But the Nuggets are looking good. And I think that Jokic would be even higher in the MVP conversation if we were seeing these kind of performances from Jamal Murray all season, because the Nuggets have been very close in winning the games that they lost. They're 9-7. The defense has not been very good at all, but Jokic has been straight up ball. And if he had the secondary guy there every single night, they're probably a little bit better than 9-7. Good to see Murray get going. He looked like he was in total control of this game. So yeah, I'm with Tassie. Sign me up for Nuggets versus Suns, because I think their first game was the one where Chris Paul hit that really big baseline jumper and then one of his teammates stepped on his shoe. So they've played three classics already. Would be fun in the playoffs, no doubt about it. But of course, for me, the biggest news out of this one, 22 rebounds from Nikola Jokic. So you know we got to do it to him, Skeets!
Nikola Jokic grabbed 22 rebounds. That's a lot of roast beef. He's on Denver. That's Mile High Beef. No dunks. We love roast beef, which is rebounds.
When you see it cut together like that, you really realize that Jokic never grabs a rebound with two hands.
Oh my goodness. Ever. This is hilarious to watch this guy rebounding. Never grabs a rebound with two hands. Barely jumps off the court. Look at how many of those are just him worming his way around DeAndre Ayton wearing an ironic number 22. Just a little tiny tip. That one rebound right off the top where he grabs it with one hand and just chucks it down the court. They didn't score on it, but he's throwing the outlet pass anyways. This was a lot different than watching Clint Capella's sloppy beef. This was an interesting beef to watch, but the beef watch continues. That's our fifth 20-rebound game so far this season. Two for Drummond, one now for Sabonis. Clint Capella and Nikola Jokic. Capella, he got pretty close over the weekend. 19 rebounds. It's looking like back-to-back beef, but this is how you inspire people. Mm. Big beef exists for 1 week, and now we got 520 rebound games. You don't need to go out there and trash people. You got to lift them up, say, we want to see those rebounds.
Yeah, I saw someone on Twitter saying that. What's going on with all these 20 rebound games? Is it because of the big beef? I think so. Everybody wants that roast beef.
What would you call it then if Capella gets the triple-double with the roast beef? Because he had the 10 blocks, too, in that game and 19 beefs.
He had it. Oh, you're saying what happens with the triple-double and the roast beef.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow. Wow. Beef and Swiss, I don't know.
Triple-decker. I think that's what...
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, why not? I think that's what Nikola Jokic is doing with that other hand when he's rebounding with one hand. He's got a roast beef sandwich in the other that he's killing.
It's incredible watching those, though. It really is. Like, you don't notice as much when you just see one at a time for some reason. Mm-hmm. You cut them all together. It's like he never, ever grabs it with two hands. It's always one.
And that music just gets me hype. Was that the Whittler on the ones and twos dropping those beats? That was nice.
Well, let's stick with the Nuggets because a couple other things here. Jamal Murray, back to him. You know, he had all those big shots. He iced the first game and then he hit the game-tying three, which got away with the travel, but he hit the shot anyway. He also gave us one of three new wedgies from the weekend, guys. So on Friday, it was Jamal Murray, Kitchener's finest, of course. I should have said that earlier. Stuck it from the wing. A classic spot. A classic spot for a wedgie. Really deep wedgie, I'd say. That one's really in there. So that's nice. Then, on Sunday, Lonnie Walker IV, from the exact same spot, basically. Another nice wedgie. That's wedgie number 12, if you're keeping track here. Murray was 11, Walker 12. And then we weren't done. Because the Blazers, guys. My goodness. I think the Blazers are going to win the championship solely because of how they've contributed to the hashtag We Are Wedgie, because we got wedgie number 13 on the season once again in a Blazers game, and once again, Lamar Hurd on the call.
Robinson denied by Covington, and what do we have?
Of course we have a wedgie.
We've gotten more of those over the last three or four games, Lamar.
We really have. Take that pass, good job, and then go up and get that. And what's that, our fourth one? Fourth wedgie?
That's the rare block wedgie. You only see those in the wild. Very patient.
The no dunks. You know, I'm going to join those guys pretty soon. We're going to talk about some of this stuff. Yeah.
Look at that. Lamar Hurd teasing his appearance coming up here on No Dunks. It's incredible. And it's like, what is that? Our fourth Blazers wedgie? Is that right? That's unbelievable this early in the season. Lamar Hurd, though, Blazers broadcaster, is coming on our show later this week. We got him penciled in for Wednesday. Got to talk to him about wedgies and, course, his Blazers team and a whole lot more. Incredible.
That was a crazy wedgie, too. That was very soft the way it kind of like got blocked and just loaded up there. It was meant to be.
Yeah. Very low, I would say, too. A low wedgie.
Underneath her.
Quite under the rim. So that's fantastic. We're at 13 wedgies, Tass. We'd have to go back and check, but I'm not sure we've ever had a start this hot, right? 13, and we're a month into the season?
I can confirm. No chance we've had such a hot start. There's no chance that we're on pace for 60-ish to start the season. And a 72-game season.
Oh,
and yes, we've taken that into account, all those asking. We include playoffs, but at this rate, Playoffs are going to be gravy on the low-hanging wedgies. We're going to blow through 50, it feels like. Yeah, and the man who gives us credit, Lamar Hurd, to have him on the call for four of them. This is the year of the wedgie.
It's truly amazing. And one more Nuggets-related thing, okay, to bring it back to the Nuggets. I just wanted to bring attention to this Monte Morris nickname on Basketball Reference that was making the rounds over the weekend. And I pointed out that we had nothing to do with this, but I wish we did. One of Monte Morris's nicknames is Count of Monte Assist / T.O. You know, for turnover. He's got a great assist-to-turnover ratio. Mm-hmm. Count of Monte Assist T.O. I can't believe Tass didn't come up with this, or Trey, or Lee, or me for that matter, because this is right in our wheelhouse. But it wasn't us. I don't know who did it. Maybe just the people at Basketball Reference are having some fun, but what a nickname.
What a nickname. Honestly, though, if Count of Monte Assisto can make it, why is Ray Biscuit's Dad Quest not on Basketball Reference? Come on.
For Gravis Vasquez, yes. We should get that up there. So what a weekend for the Nuggets there. What a weekend overall. I will say a mini winner of the weekend, Jaylen Brown. I mean, I know you don't want to watch Celtics-Sixers matchup in the playoffs. Fair enough, Tass. But Jaylen Brown somehow scored the most points ever in the shot clock era, at least. So we're talking since 1954-55. Most points scored in under 20 minutes in a game last night, yesterday. 33 points, shot 13 of 20 in just 19 minutes, which is pretty damn special there, Lele.
Yeah, I would have thought someone like Steph or Klay Thompson would have done better than that at some point. You know, it was weird. I saw that stat as well. I'm like, that seems like it's not that many points, really, for the way that the players score in the league these days. You know, or even someone like Shaq back in his day, you would think maybe in one of those blowouts he plays only the first half and he has like 36 points or something. But very, very weird, man. Digging out all sorts of crazy stats these days. It's like the baseball. Baseball, they always come up with, he's batting 600 against lefties on a Tuesday and the open roof, you know, and it's like, all right, who cares? But maybe that's it. Maybe.
Talking Tampa Tom, I saw quite the stat for him over the weekend. He was like 25-4 when games are under 29 degrees. Huh, when you're bringing in the degrees, that's a deep cut. But Jaylen, man, this guy is straight up balling. He had the 33 in 19 minutes, like you said. Also had 42 against the Sixers. And earlier this season, right, he had 42 in 29 minutes, and that was like the greatest Celtics performance since Larry Bird at the time. So this guy is knocking off legends left and right here.
Oh, Trey, I mean, on Friday's podcast, on the Drop podcast, we were doing our 1 month in awards, and like, it sort of blew my mind when you said Jaylen Brown for most improved. Man, I mean, I'm all on board with this pick now. I know there's some other great candidates, but Jaylen Brown is averaging 27.3 points per game, 6 boards, 3.5 assists. He's shooting 53% from the floor. Really good numbers across the board. And, like, Tatum's been out of the lineup because of COVID-19. Kemba obviously wasn't there for a good chunk. Celtics still have a decent record. I actually was shocked. I went to Basketball Reference this morning thinking Jaylen Brown may have cracked their top 10, NBA MVP award tracker thing. It's all based on numbers and previous votes and stuff like that. But he's not in there yet, but he's got to be damn close with what he's doing. But most improved is looking like a great pick, though. I think maybe he'll be too much in the MVP conversation if he keeps this up, that it could hurt him. But crazy stat and crazy new record there.
It looks possible. He looks like the perfect 1B right now, am I right, Lee? Because he's he's fitting along, looking like a number one option, playing alongside Jason Tatum or playing alongside Kemba Walker. It's the perfect 1B. The 1JB, if you will.
Oh, if he was to win MVP, surely he would have to also win most improved, because who would have improved more than him to go from a non-MVP to MVP this season?
Well, we had that conversation with Steph Curry, I remember, back in the day. People were trying to give it to him as well. I just think if you're in the MVP conversation, or you're winning it for that matter, you're out of the running for most improved. I feel like that's just a rule that we came up with.
Danielle has taken up painting. Oil painting, acrylic painting, other painting. I don't know what it is, but it's just incredible. If I can convince her to open up a Shopify store, I know she'll be hearing the Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, just do it, to the first real life store stage, see, you made a sale, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? How about that? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap,
Offering outdoor outfits or paintings, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From the all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Here's some information. Just like entrepreneur David Scott Martin of Antique Candle did for No Dunks on Shopify. How about that? And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/nodunks.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, those were our winners of the weekend. Let's get to losers. Tass, get us started. What do you got?
I'm going to start with the New Orleans Pelicans because last year we went to the bubble thinking the Pelicans were put into that situation. They brought in the Pelicans and their record where they were standing because everybody wanted to see Zion Williamson. They increased the number of teams to get Zion there. The hopes were that for them to get in. Their defense did not show up for Alvin Gentry. So he was axed after five seasons. Stan Van Gundy inserted. And after seven games this season, it looked like the SVG insertion was fantastic. They had the fourth ranked D. But since then, they're 29th. And they now have, you know, the second worst defense for a good stretch of the season. They've lost 8 of 9, including to the Timberwolves on Saturday, who didn't have Karl Anthony Towns and won't for a while. And they didn't have D'Angelo Russell, who was resting. Excuse me? D'Angelo Russell resting the 15th best team in the Western Conference as resting one of their players? Come on. Hey, it worked out. Yeah, it absolutely did. Yeah, they played like a team and they won. The thing is with the Pels, they've decided to play like the Bucks a little bit. Let's shut down the lane, not send anybody to the free throw line, and allow three-point shots to happen. The objective, though, is to make the guys who can't shoot all that well shoot the three-point shots and take away the corner threes, and that's just... hasn't happened. And Steven Adams has been sucking up a lot of those defensive rebounds, but Zion Williamson, not a great defensive rebounder, and they're allowing opponents to shoot 70% at the rim. That's not good enough. That's one of the worst marks in the league. Stevie Adams, that's not his forte. So they're not playing hard enough. I think that's what it comes down to. They're just not a defensive outfit. So they have to pick this thing up because they're one of those... To me, they're kind of one of the interesting teams coming into the season. And the idea was, they're going to be this hard hat team with Stevie Adams in the middle. And now people are thinking, well, maybe Zion should play the five. And maybe they should just throw J.J. Redick in the starting lineup because Eric Bledsoe and Lonzo Ball aren't scoring. So maybe they should just go all offense, basically, because Zion at the five is not going to be amazing defensively. Hey, for me, that would be fun to watch. But for Stan Van Gundy, he'd pull out every single hair he has on his head, I think, watching that. So Stevie Adams is going to stay at the center spot, but they just have to get better. And so the Pelicans, although the Western Conference is full of good stories, the Pelicans are not one of them at this point. They come home and are going to have lots of games at home to try and get their defense right. But all those tenets that are... their defense is based on is just they're just not coming through on them at this point. 8 of 9, last 8 of 9. That they're too good for that.
I saw Kendrick Perkins too tweeting about them over the weekend. He said, "Y'all really thought Stan Van Gundy was the one, huh? The Pelicans should have hired a young stud, but don't mind me though. Carry on." And then I saw that. The only reason I think I saw that, I'm not sure if I do follow Kendrick Perkins, but I saw Baron Davis retweet it. Basically doubling down, agreeing with Kendrick Perkins, sort of like, yeah, people, you know, young guys, I guess, do not really want to buy into what SVG is selling. So, I don't know, some former players thinking that at least. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but it's not good right now. You're going to make loser of the weekend probably if you lose to the Timberwolves without their best guys, because they're not a great team either. So, yeah, it's rough. I don't know if you have anything to add, Trey, about the Pelicans.
Well, a lot of the concern, it feels like, is on whether or not Zion plays defense, and there's no doubt about it. He could be better at it. He would certainly struggle playing as a small ball five on the defensive end, but he's getting buckets on the offensive end, and I really think the main problem with them defensively is their guards guard absolutely nobody. Like, yeah. Lonzo guards nobody, Eric Bledsoe guards nobody, and they're both out there for their defensive prowess more than anything. It's a walk into the lane before you're encountering either Steven Adams or Zion. So, I mean, they're at a bit of a disadvantage here, getting head starts. The guards are getting head starts to try and attack Zion, who's a short guy who can maybe put his hands up at the rim but doesn't exactly know where to be, or Steven Adams, who doesn't have great lift, isn't a super rim protector, just a big guy who takes up space. It's not looking good, especially considering they brought in, it was Lonzo and Eric Bledsoe and Steven Adams. You thought this is going to be a pretty solid defense for a defensive coach and Stan Van Gundy. He's got to be sick, absolutely sick, watching these guys get completely dusted in the pick and roll. It's not even close. It's like they come around one thing, and maybe it's Josh Hart, maybe it's J.J. Redick. Whoever it is a bucket for whichever guard is out there.
Is it safe to say they are not forming an effing wall for Stan Van Gundy in the Pelicans?
Nuh-uh.
No.
No
it's
walls.
It's a chain-link fence. You can get through it pretty easily there, Lee. Although, is it easy to get through a chain-link fence? Yeah, I guess it sort of is. If you were a mouse, it is. Think about that. Lee, anything to add to the Pelicans?
No, it's. I mean, there's a lot of expectation and hope on Zion Williamson, and he's, you know, scoring fine. He's doing all that, but it takes time to learn how to play defense. It looks like he just has never really been a big defensive player throughout his career, and now he's in the NBA and he missed most of his first season. In his second season, it's like, you're the star player in this team, fine, you're scoring nice, but you need to be able to also hold up your other end on the defensive side, and he's not able to do that. So yeah, it's like it's a battle between the Pelicans and the Kings of who has the weakest defense, and neither of them have a very impressed at all to this point.
Trey, who do you have for loser of the weekend?
My loser of the weekend, I hate to do it, it's the Orlando Magic. They had a tough weekend. On Friday, they lost to the Pacers. In this game, they led with 16 seconds left in regulation. Domantas Sabonis gets a bucket. Aaron Gordon, a turnover on the other side. Then they're up three with 44 seconds left in overtime. And then it's buckets for Domantas Sabonis and Malcolm Brogdon. Fournier misses a three on the other end. After the game, he said, "This was painful because we fought really hard, and I feel like we had this game twice. I feel like they stole it away from us." That's exactly what it felt like. It happened again on Sunday versus the Hornets. Another loss. No Aaron Gordon in this one. The ball movement was incredible to start. They were, you know, they'd assisted on like 21 of 25 baskets through three quarters or something like that. But then at the start of the fourth quarter, the Magic gave up a 25-4 run. Suddenly, they're down three. They give up two offensive rebounds. Then it somehow gets to Bismack Biyombo. They foul him. He misses two free throws. Evan Fournier finds Terrence Ross in the corner for a chuck of a three. It somehow goes in. But then on the other side, Gordon Hayward, in the midst of a good game, he drives right past Evan Fournier for a layup with basically nobody at the rim. Then the Magic get the ball on offense. A five-second violation. Two tough losses for the Magic. They've lost 7 of 8. Are they tanking? Like, are the Magic tanking? I know that they went south once Markelle Fultz got hurt, but they haven't done anything to replace him. They've been running Aaron Gordon as their point guard, which, understandable, you want to get some more out of some of your best players, see if he's the guy that you're going to actually keep around. But they could have done something. They could have brought somebody in on an exception. They could have made a move. Evan Fournier could be traded. It doesn't feel like they're doing anything to actually make their team better right now when they're really, really struggling.
Yeah, obviously the injury bug has nailed them. They're missing a lot of their guys, but that's tough. I don't know. Are they tanking? I hadn't thought about that. Sort of a sneaky tank job if they are, because they're in all these games. They could have won half these games, but they keep coming up short.
That's yeah, but they're like, they're happy to run out there with Cole Anthony as their point guard, which is understandable as well. You want to get a young guy some reps, see what he can do, but he's shooting under 40%. You're not going to win a lot of games like that when you're an offensive team that already struggles. The problem is they can't get stops defensively. This is a team that has made their bones on the defensive end, staying in every game and coming through in the clutch when they need to, but the execution has not been there, especially this weekend.
Yeah, for the Magic team to be like 19th or 20th defensive rating is not good, because they're never going to be a great offensive rating team, and they are not once again this year. But yeah, this is just going to be, I hate to say it, it's just going to be one of these classic Magic years where, like, I don't know, they'll be maybe flirting, maybe, with the play-in tournament. I would think I'd pick them to be on the outside looking in, just outside. But it's not like they're going to be probably the worst team in the league either, right, Lili? Like, they're just sort of stuck in this, like, little no-man's land.
Yeah, I mean, guys like Fournier and Terrence Ross, they would attract some interest on the trade market, but not much. I mean, no one's going to all of a sudden turn around the franchise there. So I think they do need to tank, in fact, and probably sort of start again because, you know, Vucevic, you know, he's one of those guys who he's an all-star. He's definitely an all-star. He was an all-star a few years ago, but he just doesn't move the needle all that much, even if he's having a good season, which he is. But the game last night against the Hornets was definitely there. I mean, I know you mentioned the Pacers as well, but that was there to be won. And in the fourth quarter, they got the yips and could not finish this game, couldn't score down the stretch, whereas Gordon Hayward could. And Gordon Hayward, I absolutely loved his game-winning drive there. He went inside. He didn't go for the hero ball. Instead, he made a solid move, got inside, laid it up. Beautiful way to finish the game. Had 39 points. And this was one that was like, you're going to get teams like Charlotte who are a little bit up and down themselves. And when you're in a position to finish them off, you have to do that. And Orlando just couldn't do it. And again, it's both ends. Couldn't execute defensively and offensively. It wasn't any better. So, yeah, 2-8 in their last 10. I think they were probably punching above their weight at the start of the season, acknowledging they have lost some players to injuries. But again, I mean, yeah. Fultz was having a decent season, but not like, oh my God, how can they compete now without Fultz out there? So, yeah, not sure really what the prospects are for the Magic for the rest of the season.
I loved watching Gordon Hayward's drive, but for a couple different reasons. First, watching Evan Fournier guard him, I was shocked. The shock that he was guarding him, I thought, there must be like 16 switches that have happened to have Evan Fournier guard him because he's not a defensive stopper. He's an offensive guy. And Evan Fournier, he got cooked. And then at the rim, yeah, Ken Birch was super late getting over there to help out. And Steve Clifford, Magic's head coach, was livid. And to see him get right in Ken Birch's face, into the tree's face, and get super angry, that was a good play. But yeah, Gordon Hayward, super pumped for that drive to finish it. A 39-point game. Guy's balling. This fourth 30-point game of the season. The offense is there, and they're one of those Eastern Conference teams that are, yeah, they could be good. They might not be. It's surprising with him playing so well that they're at 7-9, I believe. That popped him up to 7-9. They should be better than that. They should, you know, with Lonzo Ball, not Lonzo, the other one.
LaMelo
Ball, playing that well. You know, you'd expect them to be better than 7-9, and now they got Cody Z back as well. But on the other side, yeah, the Magic, they would have rather had Markel Fultz on him. He's hurt. They'd rather have Aaron Gordon on him. He's hurt. They'd rather have Michael Carter-Williams on him. Is Michael Carter-Williams back? I'm not sure. They'd rather have Jonathan Isaac on him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they are banged up.
Lee, what's your favorite tree?
Probably the gum tree.
Okay.
The classic gum tree, yeah.
Have I asked you that before?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've talked about the eucalyptus trees because they were in Athens, remember, to ask for the Olympics. I remember.
Yeah, it's a beautiful tree.
Absolutely.
I love a birch tree, though. I do like how a birch tree looks. That's why I was
papery.
Thought of that. Yeah, exactly. Do you have a favorite tree, Trey?
My favorite southern tree is the crepe myrtle. I like those. I like that smooth look you get on the bark there.
Yeah, it's really nice. Good tree picks, Tess. I mean, might as well finish this off. You got a favorite tree?
Well, we're staying in the south, you know. I've got different regions. I like different trees. In the south, the Spanish moss. Oof, it's an amazing tree.
Remind me what are we talking about. It's like a very... obviously, like, moss-like appearance, I assume.
Absolutely, it's like a weeping willow.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Sort of.
Oh, this is cool. Nice tree.
Yeah, it's a unique tree. Yeah.
Beautiful tree. JD, do you have a favorite tree?
Yeah, it's the maple, obviously.
Oh, oh
wow!
So you like the you like to tap that, eh? Tap that tree.
I like to tap that tree. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, you do, you kinky son of a bitch. All right, my loser of the weekend. I'll go with the Wizards. Let's just keep this very quickly. Now, the Wizards are sort of, in a weird way, a winner of the weekend because they're actually back playing basketball. Do you guys remember the Wizards? They're one of the teams in this league. They hadn't played in like 2 weeks, but they did play on Sunday. Thing is, they came back and they got their ass handed to them in the second half by the Spurs. They lost by 20. They had a good start, and they were spunky to start, but then they just got hammered as the game went on. They tired. They're short on guys. I mean, it's getting desperate. They're signing Alex Len and Jordan Bell. If you got a short last name, you can play for this team. They want to save money on the letters on the back of their jerseys, right? So they're going for short names. I think Jeremy Lin might get a call up, or he might be in the Wizards uniform soon. But anyway, Westbrook was back in the lineup. I bring this up for a real loser of the weekend. Did you guys see Westbrook? I mean, it is. He probably should not even be playing. He is coming off of an injury. I think it's that quad injury, right? And he hadn't played in a while. rough in this one, man. 3 of 11, 4 turnovers. He was a minus 20 in 25 minutes. I know that's one of your favorite stats, Lee. Russ, I mean, I hope he can get back to a little bit more of the Russ of old, but I'm worried that we'll see that at all this year, maybe, especially if he has to try and like continue to play through these lingering issues, injury issues. It's bad. The Wizards
well, and,
are bad.
And also, what's he playing for in there in Washington? They're probably not going to make the playoffs, you know, and I think you could sort of see, like, maybe it was the bit of the layoff there, but watching that game, I was like, he's just like, I wish I wasn't here. You know, I think he'd rather be anywhere else at the moment, because it just feels like he's, you know, at this stage of his career where he wants to be at least close to a championship, yeah. And it's a battle just to get to the playoffs. So the only real hope is for Bradley Beal is, you know, the only positive would be if he can lead the league in scoring for the entire season. That's something.
Wow. Time you have Hammer on, ask him, would you rather lead the league in scoring and win 3 games all year, or would you rather win 60 games and score 5 points per game? That'll be the question for him. Anyway.
But the Wizards have to figure out a way to move on and rebuild.
I mean, how long is Scotty Brooks going to have this job? Let's be honest here.
Well, I think this is the last. Yeah, I think the last year of his contract, and it's like, well, you may as well let him finish this season, I guess, because who wants that job?
I would say do the opposite. Get someone else in here. See if they can shake it up. Get something else going.
They just need to hit the rebuild button. They smash it and see what you can get for Beal and see what you can get for Westbrook. Get some picks and start again next season, I think.
Tap that maple tree and smash that tree, baby. Yeah. Lee, what do you got for Loser of the Weekend? Finish us off here.
Yeah, so you remember on Friday's show, of course, where Shaq got worst of the week for calling out Donovan Mitchell. Well, it got worse for Shaq over the weekend because an Instagram user named CalsoScoped, who does great work, actually, by the way, great artwork, put up a picture of Donovan Mitchell dunking on Miami Heat Shaq like that. And I said, Shaq don't really want the smoke with the spider. Beautiful job, you know. It's a Photoshop. Obviously, it's a Photoshop. Well, Shaq didn't appreciate that too much. Oh. And he slid into CalsoScoped's DMs there and he said, shut your dumb ass up. And CalsoScoped did the best thing by putting it up there, putting it on the Instagram and saying, look, he didn't like it. He didn't appreciate that. Now, the reason I bring this up is because a lot of people who were defending Shaq's approach for what he said to Donovan Mitchell and how he said it were like, you know, these young guys can't take criticism. Well, the old guys apparently can't take a bit of banter either. Shaq not happy with that. So I think that just makes Shaq look a little petty and not being able to handle a jokey sort of critical attack on himself. I don't know. What the hell? But you can't slide into anyone's DMs these days, because if you do, people are just going to light you up and say, look, man, like you look pathetic. So, you know, Shaq, it wasn't good what he said to Donovan, how he said it. And he could have at least manned up and been like, yeah, you know, maybe I shouldn't say that.
Manned up with Icy Hot.
With, LeBron. And
call in the general. He's got my
LeBron
back.
And Kevin Durant were also made a few comments about, Shaq's approach there. And I think it was right. So, I think in the end, Shaq did get dunked on in the social media sense rather than in the on-court sense.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. We talked about this in great detail on Friday's podcast. But Lee pointing out that just great art. That critical attack of art.
Critical attack.
Oh, I'm wounded. A critical attack. Photoshop boys got me.
You know, I was thinking about it because he posted, Miami Heat Shaq, who was still decent. You know, he won a championship there with the Heat.
Yeah.
Would it have been better to put up like Phoenix Suns or Cleveland Cavaliers or even Celtic Shaq? You know, would you go the other way and put Lakers Shaq or Orlando Shaq, where he was big and dominant, and he's still getting dunked on? Like, is it more critical?
No, I think the Heat's the perfect sweet spot. That's why.
Right. Yeah. So he was still good enough, still an all-star.
Yeah.
I guess he was an all-star in Phoenix as well. That was his last season. But I was thinking, like, you know, if you put him up as Shaq, Lakers Shaq, it's like, oh, he's dunking on, you know, super prime Shaq. You know, but But then you could also just say you put him up as the old man Shaq getting dunked on.
Yeah. Also, you got to find the right photo, Lee. Come on, man. Like the Photoshop boys, you can't. You got to hope there's a good photo from behind of maybe Shaq getting dunked on previously. Then you can Photoshop it in. That's how this works.
One thing I was wondering about, I was wondering, was that Shaq? Because what the artist definitely did was accentuate the roll in the back of his head.
Yeah.
You see that extra little neck roll there, making Shaq look as chunky as possible.
Wow. So you're saying, Tass, maybe this is somebody else and that he's just done a great job on the jersey and putting in O'Neal and stuff like that.
I don't know. I mean, the levels to this critical attack, I don't know. It looks like Shaq. It definitely looks like Shaq. Who else could it be?
Ooh, critical Alonzo. Art attack, Alonzo. Man. Wow. Critical
attack. Calcioscope with the critical attack.
We gotta start doing emergency podcasts for any time there's a critical art attack out there.
Hey, go and check him out though on Instagram. He's got some good, nice.
I've never heard of this this Instagram account. You seem to be a fan. Do you follow?
No, I don't. But only because I saw it. It was going making the round, so I checked it out and I scrolled through. And
what else has he done?
Well, there's Alonzo and LeVar, Alonzo and LaMelo sort of going up against each other. There's a nice one there.
Does a thing where he's merging past and the present. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, but does it really well too. Like, wouldn't be like if I did it where you could clearly just see like two photos slapped together. Like, he actually blends it in and makes it look good.
Maybe he could do one of like a young Lee Ellis and an old Lee Ellis playing each other. Like, you see that MJ one every once in a while, right? Like, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
We'll reach out.
Ty Winter in the stream team says, Joel Anthony? That's who I was thinking. It does look like the rear head of Canadian Joel Anthony. Oh, wow. Man. In the rear head.
Okay. Amazing. Well, those are our winners and losers of the NBA weekend. I'm sure we missed some, so you let us know in the YouTube comments. Let us know right now if you're the stream teamers, or tweet at us at NoDunksInc. A little bit of news, guys, before we start wrapping this up. The Brooklyn Nets will have some extra cash to use to try and sign or trade for an additional player because the league granted their application for a $5.7 million disabled player exception for Spencer Dinwiddie, who is, of course, out for the rest of the season. Tass, where are they going to go? How are they going to put this money to use, man?
Well, I'll say first and foremost, people want to play with the Brooklyn Nets.
Sure.
When they see those three offensive weapons go at it, I heard Richard Jefferson, analyst for the Brooklyn Nets right now, talking about, well, maybe I can get out there for 18 minutes. And, you know, Richard Jefferson's a joker, but I think deep down, he's thinking what a lot of veteran NBA players are thinking.
Right.
I could go play with those dudes. And speaking of, former players that kind of look like Shaquille O'Neal, kind of look like Joel Anthony from the back, Dwayne Dedman is available. I know maybe he's, you know, not your rim alter that you desire. He is more of but he's a tough guy. He is very tough. He's willing to lay the hammer down when need be. That's what the Brooklyn Nets want. That's what Kevin Durant is yelling at Reggie Perry every time. Come on, that DeAndre Jordan. Like, he just wants a real physical guy in the lane. So Dwayne Dedman could be a guy, and I'm sure anybody would want to play with those guys. I'm not. The thing is, you got to go get a big, and you probably want another wing defender because Kevin Durant is having to do so much against the big wing defenders that it seems like every team has. They got a couple of needs out there.
Well, they recently signed free agent forward Norvell Pell, right? The Nets did, to help the front court. But you're right. I mean, Dedman, I think, is available. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is available too, right? So he could be had. But those guys, fact check me on that. I think he is, though. But those guys could be sort of had for, I would assume, the minimum if they're not on a roster. So will they wait with this DPE to use that, you know, which is obviously a much more good chunk of money to use on someone that comes out in the buyout candidate market and stuff like that, or in a trade, you know, for like a McGee? We talked about JaVale McGee as possibility, or like, I don't know, can Biombo be in play there or something like that? Ed Davis, I know his name's been thrown around. But or maybe, like you said, Tass, like a wing guy. I love the idea of them getting Rondae Hollis-Jefferson back on the Nets. I think that makes a lot of sense. He can give you some defensive presence. No, Trey, you don't think so? A little bit?
I think they're done with him. I think most teams are done with him. If a team wanted him for defense, it should have been the Minnesota Timberwolves who had him, and they just said no. The worry I would have is it seems like JaVale McGee would be the perfect candidate, but are there enough basketballs to go around? Did you see JaVale handling the ball on the fast break this weekend? I don't know if Steve Nash is going to be able to find touches for four elite ball handlers out there.
Trey, that was JaVale McGee. What he did this weekend was Trey Kirby at the pickup runs. It took me back. Oh, yeah. It made me long to play hoops again. I was like, oh man. Every Wednesday night, there would be a Trey Kirby, JaVale McGee like fast break where he's getting fancy with it.
Rumbling, bumbling, stumbling down the court. If you get a rebound as a big guy at the free throw line, it is your obligation to take it the full length of the court, coast to coast, and finish with a ridiculous shot.
What a resurgence for JaVale McGee's career. A couple of years ago, out of the league completely, goes and wins a couple of championships with the Warriors, one with the Lakers, and now he's a fun, impactful vet on the Cavs. I mean, it's just incredible, this guy. He was just a clown there for a couple of years, and now it's just like he's fun to watch and he plays well, and it's great for the Nets to have Cavs to have him on that team.
And his name comes up on our podcast every second day because we keep talking about, like, oh, JaVale McGee could be had. He could be had. I wonder who could get him. Like,
it's like shades of 2012 to me. I feel like at the trade deadline that year, we talked about Ramon Sessions nonstop. Yeah. We're like, oh, man, this is it for the Lakers. This is what they've needed the whole time, somebody to run that second unit. We're talking about JaVale McGee here, the veteran leader. But honestly, he would help the Nets.
Ramon Sessions had a 20-assist game, didn't
he? There you go. Yeah.
He had a 40-point game, too, I think, Sessions. He was just the hottest thing in fantasy the following season. It was like, get Ramon Sessions, and it was like, nah.
20 boards is roast beef. What would 20 assists be?
That's a good question.
Great question. Save it. Think it over. For tomorrow. Trey, have something tomorrow.
I'm not a passer, Tass. There's no way I would be able to come up with something like this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
JD, my man, coming through always with the Monday Tweet of the Night. You had all weekend. What you got your eye on?
Had all weekend. It comes from yesterday, actually, and it was the big story on everyone's mind is that the stage has been set for an epic showdown, and it's one we've all been waiting for. We have a literal clash of titans coming. People are comparing it to LeBron versus Jordan in the NBA Finals. I saw this quote on CNN. It's the meeting of the GOAT and his potential successor, and the fans are salivating at the prospect. I'm, of course, talking of Godzilla versus Kong. The trailer dropped this weekend. And, people are pumped. It's the king of monsters versus the king of Kongs, I guess. King Kong. And there is an NBA tie-in here because Kevin Durant already calling it, I can't see Godzilla losing this matchup. I mean.
Yeah, but what did KD think of the McGregor fight heading in? I want to know.
That's a good question. I don't know, but that's a bold prediction. I mean, Rebecca Hall, one of the actresses in the film, she says it right in the trailer. Kong bows to no one. So, I mean,
doesn't mean he's gonna win.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, you know, who would you favor in this matchup?
Oh,
or JD? Yeah.
I'm going Kong for sure.
You're going Kong.
I'm going Kong. Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense, like, not having any idea what the actual story is, but like Kong is sort of like ours, like Earth's.
Right.
Like did we make Kong? I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, he feels like he's on our side more than Godzilla, this like, you know, monster from the sea, I guess.
You're right.
Right.
Created by nuclear weapons, you know. But Godzilla was sort of a good guy in the end, wasn't he? In the last film? I can't remember. I think he was defending mankind, and now... Now I guess Godzilla's the bad guy. If you live long enough to be the hero, you become the villain. Was that how it goes?
Something like that, yeah.
And then a quick addition here. Since we were talking nicknames earlier and big dumb movies, The Athletic's own Chris Kirshner, with this hot news yesterday, John Collins shared that the Hawks training staff has given D'Angelo Hunter the nickname DeAndre Megatron. Hunter. DeAndre, sorry. What did I say?
D'Angelo.
Did I say D'Angelo?
Yeah.
I'm literally reading it. Anyway. I'm terrible at this. I can't believe you guys like to do this. Anyway, he quickly corrected. It's actually, he wants to be called Optimus, not Megatron. So Megatron's better though, no? I mean.
Well, yeah, but Megatron was the nickname of
Calvin Johnson.
A wide receiver. Yeah, Calvin Johnson in football. So maybe it's like. Has there been an Optimus before?
I don't know. There was a Grimes, wasn't there? Optimus Grime. Is that a basketball player?
I think John Wall was Optimus Dime on Basketball Reference.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Hmm.
Yeah, that's maybe he just doesn't want to be the bad guy, DeAndre Hunter. Yeah, he'll let D'Angelo Hunter be Megatron.
But who do you, just to circle back, who do you like in the Godzilla versus Kong matchup, Lili?
Well, I mean, if you're talking a crocodile versus a ape, and it's true. On land,
basically.
If it's on land, I mean, I guess the ape can get on top of him and do the business there.
Oh, okay, like you like Kong with a submission. What round are you going?
That's probably what I'm saying. But if it's near the water, then the crocodile I think can take care of him, you know.
Right.
So I think it favors which home ground advantage you have there.
Really. Well, what if the crocodile can breathe fire?
That adds a new element. I'll say that
definitely hard adds to a call.
I mean, like, get a hippo in there anyway. A hippo would do the damage on both of those in a second. A hippo's you know, quick enough, strong enough, can go on land, can go on water. So I hope whoever wins this. In the sequel, takes on the hippo for the world championship.
Oh, for the undisputed title, yeah.
Yeah.
The hippo's just waiting, training.
Exactly.
Seeing who comes out. All right.
Hippos wipe those two in a second.
Wow. Leave it to Lee for me to ask him, who does he like in a Godzilla versus Kong matchup to say, I like the hippo? Yeah. Incredible. You always amaze. All right. Pick 'em result from Friday night. It was the Nets-Cavs game. The Nets were favored by 9.5. Had to win big. But the Cavs got the victory. We probably would have had the Cavs as winner of the weekend if they didn't follow up their performance there on Friday night by getting absolutely shellacked by Jaylen Brown and the Celtics there on Sunday. But anyway, good victory for Lili. You're 9-12. You had the Cavs to cover, and they got the victory, like I said. So you're 9-12. Everybody else had the Nets, so everybody else got a loss. Trey's 9-12. Tass is 8-13. He's currently in last place, and I'm 11-10. A lot of games on tonight, Tass. Which one are we picking from?
We're going to the Celtics and the Bulls. The Celtics won by nearly 40 on Sunday against the Cavs. Chicago has won 3 of 4, though. So you think this line would be a little bit smaller than it is at 7.5, but the Bulls are getting 7.5 points, can lose by 7 or less. Trey, what do you think about that? You think the Bulls are coming out strong?
Oh, of course, Tassie. That's way too big a line against the Chicago Bulls, who, as my good friend Tom Poro messaged me over the weekend, are 100% back. If you've got a yoga mat, you need to roll it out. Lay down and check out the game with your No Dunks immaculate items. The Bulls are back. They're keeping this one close, and they're taking the W.
Is that Tommy Poro lying down there beside you?
That's right. That's right.
Maybe he should get up and put his Christmas tree away. Come on, Tommy Poro. It's time, man.
Jeez, Tommy.
He's a festive man. Yeah. Celebrates year-round.
Okay, so you got the Bulls to cover, obviously. Oh, yeah. You and Tommy Poro. What do you got, Lili?
Yeah, the Bulls were back until they ran into the Lakers, but they kept that one close enough, too. No Kemba Walker tonight, but Jason Tatum is back for the Celtics.
Ooh.
I think the Bulls can cover, though. I give me Chicago.
Okay, Tass, go ahead.
I'm joining Tommy. I'm joining Trey. I'm joining Lee. Give me the Bulls.
I'll swerve. Let's make this interesting. I'll take the Celtics. Yeah, they had a dominant performance there. on Sunday. Why can't they do it again? I'd say excited to hear Jason Tatum's back in the mix there, too. That could help. So I'll take the Celtics to win by 8. It's a big line. Feels a little big. I'm with you on that one, but everybody else has the Bulls, Tommy Poro's Bulls, to cover. Put the tree away, Tommy. I actually put my Christmas stuff away yesterday. Had already taken it down, but it had it all boxed up just in the spare room. Got it in the crawl space yesterday, guys. It's finally out of sight, out of mind. But yeah. You got your tree down, Lili? I assume you do.
Yeah. It's so much fun putting the tree up, but then like by January 2nd or 3rd, it's like, get this tree out of my face. I want to move on from Christmas straight away.
Wow.
What are you moving on to, though? There's no good holiday.
It's like,
no festive holiday.
It's just...
Is that what you Lee does to Roxy when it's January 2nd or 3rd?
Because it feels like sometimes that tree could be up until like now, you know, like January 20 or something. You're like,
we've had friends that have kept their tree up till like June, right? Shout out to the Browns.
Yeah. Christmas is like great, but once June, it's over, move on from it, you know?
That's a nice looking thing, though, sometimes. Okay, I guess you're not very festive. That's fine.
No, we are festive while it's Christmas, but after the New Year's, once New Year's hit, boom, move on.
Okay, great. Well, let's wrap it up then. Let's move on. There's no, you know, this is like turning into Christmas here on this podcast. Is keep emailing your questions and comments in for our next Beach Steppin' podcast, nodunks@theathletic.com. Like, comment, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. Grab your No Dunks merch at nodunks.com and subscribe to The Athletic for $3.99 a month right now. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks to sign up so they know that we sent you. Fun show here on a Monday. We'll be back on Tuesday with What You Need to Know from Tassie early in the morning, and then The Daily Show, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thank you so much for joining us. And remember, the strong maple tree has sap. Trey's friend has a last name, Poro. And I'm thirsty, so I would love both those things in a sap Poro. Whatever.
Wow, it was incredible. Embrace the day, people. You could stay.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.